The following talk was given at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 23, 2025. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Morning, everybody. Great to see you today. Really nice day outside today, actually. So I came from, you'll probably notice the sweatshirt that I'm wearing. I got a couple compliments on it this morning. It's my, I had to coach my daughter's hockey team. So I came from practice this morning.
A little more towards you. There you go.
Okay. Yeah. So I came from practice this morning. We had practice early, 7:30 to 8:30. And so I'm not able to make it on Sundays as much as I used to. So I apologize for that, but I got to tell you, I wouldn't miss my daughter's hockey for the world. I mean, it's just like so much fun. She's 5 years old. She's on a hockey team and man, is it just a joy to be a part of that process. So I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. Yeah. But yeah, so that's just where I came from this morning. But today, I wanted to talk about the three legs of meditation practice. And so because of this has been on my mind for a couple months now, actually, where I've never been this busy in my life, to be honest with you. I'm in this like year-long dialectical behavioral therapy training that I have to do every week. It's very intensive, training that I'm going through for that. I have my practice preparing for classes, talks, other stuff at work, my home life, coaching hockey. It's just I've never been this busy before, And within the midst of all that, as some of you know, I've been coming here for quite a while, This practice is the heart of what I do. I don't know how to say it correctly. It's the core of my life, essentially. I took vows to take up this practice, and so I take that very seriously. And it's sort of like over the years, and I guess I've been really busy for a long time. I went to school for many years, college, while I was practicing down here at Dharma Field. Meanwhile, trying to take up this practice as wholeheartedly as I could, then I finished up school and it was kind of like, all right, time to relax and take it easy and, focus on my practice and stuff like that. And then I had a daughter, and career stuff. And it's just like, man, life gets busy sometimes, and it's, this is just the seasons of life, if you will. And so, just in thinking about that, in the different seasons of my practice, if you will, I'm very grateful to have encountered Steve Hagen's teachings that he lays out very clearly in what this is and how to take up this practice, even in the midst of our busy lives, And it really comes back to the three legs of meditation practice. I'm a thinker, I've always been really drawn to philosophy and that type of stuff. So for a long time, I was very, I wanted to get to the core of the difficult teachings, I wanted to know the really in-depth, intricate teachings and sort of get a good understanding of those. In doing that, though, sometimes you overlook just here now, practice, which is like, it's always available to us, and so that's sort of like where this talk came from. And so, this is in Steve Hagen's book, Meditation Now or Never, and he talks about the three legs of meditation practice. So I'm going to go through a couple passages. I don't know if I'll get through all of it today. There's kind of a lot here, but I'll do my best. All right, so there are three essential elements to meditation practice, which is regularity, meditation with others, and non-judgment. All three are necessary if your practice is to mature and flower. These three aspects of meditation work together as a whole, in the same way that a three-legged stool needs all three legs to provide support and stability. And very important. You know, this is one of Steve's book that I overlooked for a little while, because it's like, well, meditation, we know what that is. You know, I've been doing that for a number of years, and it's sort of like, but it's the heart, you know, it's the meat and potatoes of what we're doing here. It's like this practice of here now reality. So very, very helpful book, I would say. I've heard it said many times that meditation is our best teacher. So as much as it's fun to engage in like the deep philosophical teachings, you know, it's like the meditation itself is actually our best teacher, you know. So all Dharma teachings point to just this here now reality. That's what all of the teachings are pointing to. And it's so simple and straightforward and direct that we miss it. We miss it because we get caught up in what we're thinking, and wanting to achieve something from our meditation. Just this can always be seen directly. And as I mentioned, our biggest hurdle is our busy minds. You know, we get really caught up in what we think. Meditation is helpful to quiet our minds and come back to just this here now reality. So practice and enlightenment are inseparable. This is one of Dogen's core teachings. You know, practice, enlightenment, these are not two. So Dogen teaches that practice and realization are not two. Awakening is actually inseparable from practice. A while back, I don't remember how long ago it was now, like 2 years or something like that, I did a course on the Mountains and Water Sutra. And in the Mountains of Water Sutra is actually a fascicle in Dogen's Shobo Genzo. And he writes about the mountains walking, you know. And this phrase expresses the reality, that reality is dynamic and alive, even in what seems solid and unmoving. So if we think about mountains, right, our mind probably goes to something solid, you know, something big and immovable, you know, a big immovable, piece of land. That is just like stable, solid, and unmoving. Dogen uses this as sort of a way to jar our usual thinking patterns. So mountains appear fixed, yet they change over time and depend on countless conditions. And so he uses this phrase, mountains, the mountains are walking, you know. And this really expresses impermanence, that nothing is static, nothing is not changing, an interdependent arising where everything arises through countless changing conditions, and that nothing exists on its own. You know, even though it seems that way, when we conceptualize, when we think about, and when we frame the world in our usual way that we do it, it appears static. It appears that objects are separate and apart from other things. And so this mountain's walking is a way to jar our thinking and sort of get us out of our usual way of you know, conceptualizing our experience. So you might be asking, as I did when I was developing this, like, what does this have to do with meditation? You know, meditation, the three legs of meditation. Well, when we sit, we often think that we're doing something separate from life, that it's a solitary, isolated activity. Even if we're sitting with other people, we still might have the idea that this is something that is personal, that it really doesn't have connection to other beings or other things going on in the world. But that's off the mark. That isn't accurate, actually. So our practice is not a static act. It's a living flow of all conditions, inseparable from this here now reality, totality or wholeness. We're always inseparable from that. It seems like we're not, because we're caught. You know, we're caught in our usual frameworks, our usual thinking or conceptualizing, and it really seems that we're separate. But meditation brings us back to the here now reality. And we can eventually, hopefully, see that our usual way of viewing the world or other things, however you want to say it, is it's off the mark. you know. So our meditation practice really isn't an isolated activity like we usually think that it is. So the phrase Namshusho Ito is a fundamental teaching of Dogen, and this is the phrase the Shusho Ito. Breaking this down, Shu is practice, and Sho is realization or enlightenment. And then Ito is one rank or not two. So Shisho or Shusho Ito literally means practice and realization are not two. Practice and realization are not separate. And so practice realization is the mountains walking. That makes sense. I was worried if that would come across okay. It was a little bit muddy, I think at one point. Hopefully you got the gist there. So the three legs of practice help bring us back to the whole. Just as the three legs of practice work together as one, Zen teachings remind us that ordinary actions and awakening are inseparable. And there's a koan that points to this reality, and it's one that I used in a class that I did about just this, teachings by Dongshan. So the Book of Serenity, case 21. Yun Yan was sweeping the ground outside the temple. Dawu saw him and said, "Too busy." Yun Yan replied, "You should know that there's one that's not busy." Dawu said, "Well, in that case, there are two moons in the sky." Yun Yan held up his broom and said, "Which moon is this?" You know, I'm not going to take the time to break down all of it. There's a lot here, actually. So there's a lot I could say about this. But basically the koan shows that practice and awakening are not separate. Sweeping and the one who sweeps, are not two. They're not separate, you know, as we commonly think. So basically his Dharma brother is sort of, scolding him or testing him in a way, saying, you know, if you're sweeping, you should know, that you're too busy to sweep, you know, kind of like testing his understanding, you know, and he fires back and said, you know, which moon is this? Like implying that they're not separate. There's not two moons. The sweeping and practice are not separate. They're not two. There's not two different realizations or two different awakenings. So when these work together, regularity, meditation with others, and non-judgment, this is expressing the one moon, totality. The moon is usually a symbol of awakening or realization. So these three, meditation with others, non-judgment, regularity, they work together in countless ways. And so regularity is strengthened by the support of others, and the ability to refrain from judgment is supported by the power of regularity. The realization that we're not separate from others grows naturally from regularity and non-judgment. You guys tracking what I'm saying so far? I was a little bit worried about this because honestly, like what I've gone through, the koans that are brought up and especially, can be like whole talks in and of themselves, you know, so I was trying to weave these together. So I really do think they bring out, what the teaching of, the three practices are, of meditation practice. So Steve's way of kind of breaking down what our practice is, I found to be very helpful, you know, regularity, sitting with others, and non-judgment. You know, I don't know if I'm missing something, but I haven't seen that anywhere else. So I don't know if that's unique to your teachings. Katagiri? Okay. Well, thank you, Katagiri and Steve Hagen, for breaking that down. So I've been a member of like recovery meetings in the past. And I had a sponsor, who used to break down things in a way, just similar to that, which was very helpful, you know. You go to like AA meetings, and for a while I was like, what are we doing here? Like, what is the program? Like, what is the steps that get you to where you're not obsessing over using substances, right? And I had a sponsor who broke it down very, very succinctly. And he was like, you know, basically it's go to meetings, work the steps with a sponsor, help other people. And then there's a fourth one. And he always used to say, and have fun, you know, don't forget to have fun, because recovery is not supposed to be just not using substances. It can be an enjoyable life as well. So that in my mind, there's like a correlation there where when teachings are broken down in a very simple way that point directly to what it actually is, it's just very, very helpful teachings, you know? So I'll go through each of the three legs of meditation practice here. So the first one is regularity. So meditation practice is for life. It's not something that we take up for a quick fix or temporary relief. The practice of refining the mind has no end. I heard it once said, which just really put it very succinctly as far as what that means, regularity. If you think about brushing your teeth, you know, you don't question brushing your teeth, right? I mean, you just get up, you do it, hopefully every day, maybe two times a day, morning, evening. It's just part of your life. It's what you do, you know. So I heard a teacher early on say that, and it's just, all right, that's what it is. You know, that's what regular meditation practice is. We take this up in a way that it's we don't question it. It's just part of what we do, you know. And bringing it back to how my life has been so busy throughout the years and off and on, you know, the way that sort of practice periods are set up here at Dharma Field, I found to be very helpful. I participated in them for a number of years, and I found that to be very helpful just to set the rhythm of what this looks like, you know. So what I learned early on is that, you know, life kind of comes in those seasons where you're busy for a while, you have different things going on. There's summer, fall, winter, spring, you know, and those all look kind of different, you know. So every 3 or 4 months, I would say, what I've done is I've just taken a look at what my current meditation schedule looks like in order to accommodate all of the things that I need to take care of in life. Okay. And I started doing that when I was going to school regularly. And it just happened to coincide with the semesters at school. So it was pretty easy to fall into this routine, of doing meditation practice. And then once I completed school and moved on to career, you know, family life, et cetera, it seemed to be a little bit more complicated. I couldn't, you know, break it up into 3 or 4 month segments necessarily, but I still do that, from time to time, is look at my practice and how can I possibly sit regular meditation practice into my routine, you know. And I'll just tell you my current schedule, you know, is basically, I have a partner who works as a nurse for a hospital system. She works 12-hour shifts, like what do you call that? Swing shifts, or yeah, I think it's called swing, where she'll work like evenings, 7 to 7:30 in the morning sometimes, and then she'll work day shifts sometimes. And it's like weekends during the week, it's unpredictable basically. And so what I've had to do is basically just on the days that she is working, then I have to take my daughter to school. I have a period between 5:10 in the morning until 6, basically, that I can sit meditation when it's quiet in our house. We've got 3 kids, so it's, you know, it's pretty busy. But there's that period of time where I can sit, and have the peace and the quiet, whatever. And then when she's not working, sometimes I can make it here to Dharma Field to sit with the community. If not, if I have something going on, I have to bring my daughter to daycare, whatever the case is, I can still make that 5:10 to 6 in the morning, right? So my point here is that we should be able to set up some time where we can sit, you know, on a regular basis, and that changes, it fluctuates. And then I can come to Sundays at times. So I pay attention to that and just make sure that I'm able to fit in the meditation where I can. Sometimes it's so busy where I can't even sit meditation for a little bit, you know. And then I'm working on other things. You know, there's other ways to practice besides formal sitting meditation. You know, as a matter of fact, this here now reality is always available to us. You know, it's not even available to us. We're inseparable from it. It's just whether or not we can see that and realize that. So regularity is not mechanical routine, like a habit or a routine. So this is not like a routine or a habit that we show up for, you know, where we do it mindlessly almost, like brushing your teeth, for example. It's more like this is a practice of coming back to the here now reality of this very moment with awareness, with intention of being with wholehearted engagement in just this moment. You know, that's our practice, to always just come back to the here now reality. And with that, it's always available. This is always available to us. You know, again, available is not the right word. So when our mind resists meditation schedule, that's precisely the time to stick to it. And so we might start to notice after a while, this sort of like, itch in our mind that we get. We're like, we don't want to do something. We have a resistance, to doing something that we, you know, should be doing, or, you know, however you want to word it. When we notice that, there's precisely the time to show up and do meditation. Because our usual ways to get drug around by our usual, relative mind, or the egoistic mind, whatever you want to call it. I know I say this every time that I do a talk lately, but I really don't think I'm going to get through all of what I wanted to get through today. So I apologize for that. And I have to break this into two. So because we continuously encounter new and often unexpected circumstances, our ongoing task is to return to this moment with awareness. And so this is not our usual, you know, sort of philosophy or framework or sort of like set of rules and regulations that we have to follow in order to be a practitioner of Zen. And that's exactly why I was drawn to it, because this isn't about adhering to a certain set of principles. You know, this is a practice of just showing up to the here and now. And it's always different. You know, reality is always changing. It's flux. It's fluid. And it's always changing. And so our practice is to show up in the midst of that with awareness, and come back to just this moment with awareness. So there's no transcendent end state where we'll eventually arrive at, where we'll no longer have to be present and to practice awareness. So I don't know if any of you have noticed, but this is sort of unending, you know. This practice, like, does not have an end to it. I'm sorry to tell you. You know, it's sort of like we approach things in our usual way, and we want to get the thing. We want to cross the finish line, get the degree, have somebody pat us on the back and say, good job, you passed the test type of thing. But reality isn't like that. There's no end to this. Our meditation practice has no end, precisely because reality doesn't have beginnings and endings like we usually think it does. And so there's no end to this. And we get confused sometimes into thinking, I'll just personalize this. At one point in time, I really was thinking that, hey, as soon as I get the robe, or I get the stuff, the Zen paraphernalia, you know, then it's like, oh, that's it. Then I have arrived. You know, it's like, then I crossed the finish line and I could be done. You know, or I don't know what I was thinking. But it's not like that, you know, precisely because reality does not have beginnings or endings. There's no end to our practice. So this is for life, you know. I mean, it doesn't have to be. I guess you can, you know, go about your usual way of falling into the delusion, you know, that's fine. But really, our practice has no end. So Steve Hagen goes on to say, without consistency, We fall into the worn patterns and habits of an undisciplined and egocentric mind. Our usual ways to be drug around by our self-centered thoughts, and we usually live completely out of the relative. We live completely out of a relative understanding of reality and totally live out of that. And this is chasing after this and pushing away that, the push-pull that we usually engage in, as if somehow that's going to get us to a point of satisfaction or peace, or whatever it is that we're seeking, you know, that end state, where we're just going to be all blissed out for the rest of our lives or something, you know. That's our usual way. So if you would only rid yourselves of concepts of ordinary and enlightened, you would find that there is no Buddha other than this mind. That's a quote by Wang Po, you know. So in the way that I've been talking just now, it might give the impression that our usual ways, we should poo-poo that, you know, like that's bad. We should push that away. And you know, what Wang Po is pointing out here is that that isn't it either. You know, it isn't that we dismiss the relative. It isn't that that's bad, you know. This ordinary mind is Buddha. You know, this mind is Buddha. We're always inseparable from reality as or wholeness. We just don't realize that we can't see it. All right. So, yeah, I'm only on... That was only through the first one. I got... I still have yet to go through meditating with others and non-judgment. And I'm already at like 10:30 here. A lot more that I had to say, I guess, than I originally thought. Well, I'll just say meditation with others, very helpful. It's very helpful to sit with others in a community and have that be a regular part of practice. We really support each other in the practice that we do. And so very, very helpful. Sangha is very, very helpful part of this practice. Non-judgment, we definitely have a habit of judging. And if it's not other people, it's ourselves, you know. So when we fall off the beam in meditation, when we find ourselves caught up in thinking, caught in the relative, our usual way is to judge, you know, judge ourselves for you know, engaging in the relative. We don't need to do that because that's just more thinking. You know? That's just more of the same. Man, sorry, guys. I was hoping that it was going to be one of those things where I always think I overprepare and I have too much to say. And I usually say that and I'm like, but then I end up getting through it. You know, I thought today was going to be the same. Apparently not. We're at 10:30. So I'll just open it up for questions and save the rest for a future talk, I guess. So that being said, any questions or comments? Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for your talk. You're describing a part of practice is having this feeling come up of like, oh, I don't want to do it. I have whatever reason to not do it, but showing up, that's exactly the moment to show up anyway. And yet you're a dad and you have this really good reason. There is a reason you need to not show up sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I wonder how you work with that when you do need to discern sometimes how or modify how you do your practice, and yet that can double as an excuse to go when you're not feeling like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very, very, thank you for the insight there and question, I suppose. I had some practice with this in going to school. You know, I went to college for about 10 years. And I was very busy with that for a number of years while I was simultaneously trying to practice wholeheartedly, you know, here at Dharma Field, you know. And in that, what I found is that I felt like they were separate. Like my education, trying to find a vocation, job stuff, like that was separate from practice. Ultimately, what I ended up seeing is that they're not separate, you know. We think that, you know, it seems that way, You know, and you might think, well, we don't really need to sit meditation with the community then. We don't need to practice in a, you know, in a certain way. Well, I would watch out for that because it's very helpful to have a regular practice with the community, all of the things, the three legs of meditation practice. But to answer your question, directly, we're always inseparable from this, from reality, you know. It's just a matter of whether we see that or we don't. That's the practice, you know. And so it doesn't ultimately have to look a certain way, you know. And once we find that mind, you know, that meditation can be so helpful to see, this is always available, you know. And again, I'm not saying not to practice, you know, and like formally or whatever. That's not what I'm saying either, you know. But this is life, it's reality. And so yeah, maybe it's not ideal to have such a busy life at this point in my life. But again, I wouldn't trade it for the world. I mean, it's just like this is yeah. I don't know how to say more than that. Is that helpful? Yeah.
Keeping with each
Right.
other, they feel.
Yeah, always, always. And this is part of the non-judgment, you know. So as soon as we start to judge our practice, you know, it's like, well, it should be this way, or I should be doing that. That's our thinking mind, you know, that's the relative, you know. And again, we don't want to go on the other end of the spectrum and say we don't have to practice at all anyways. You know what I mean? So it's, I don't know how to say it, in the best way here, but I think you get the gist probably. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.